Well, not so long ago, the media consensus was that Donald Trump would cop a huge voter backlash, akin to the shellacking of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton in the midterms of 2010 and 1994. Now, back then, the Democrats had spectacularly lost control of both chambers of Congress. Shell-shocked Democrats emerged from those midterm elections in very bad shape, and it was believed that this year the Republicans would endure the same kind of a humiliation. Well, that was the conventional wisdom a few months ago, and this week was the American electorate's first opportunity to render a national verdict on Trump's presidency. Now, the national vote did not follow the media script from several months ago, the northern summer. Yes, turnout and enthusiasm were high. The results were mixed. Although the Democrats have won enough seats to regain the House of Representatives, Republicans have strengthened their hold on the Senate. So what does all this mean for American politics in the lead-up to the next presidential election? That's in 2 years' time, 2020. Carlin Bowman is a senior scholar at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington. And Alan Lichtman is professor of history at American University in Washington. He's author of The Embattled Vote in America, From the Founding to the Present. That's just out by Harvard University Press. Carlin, Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan, you write in The Guardian that Trump would inspire high turnout. You were right. Did the results surprise you?
Not really. Certainly the Democrats met expectations in taking over the House. And it really doesn't matter that they don't have a huge majority in the House, because whoever controls the House controls everything. You control the speakership. You control the committee chairmanships. You have the subpoena power. But the Democrats certainly were disappointed in the Senate results, particularly in Florida, where it looks like Bill Nelson, the incumbent Democratic long-serving senator, is going to lose by a couple of tenths of a percentage point. That was a seat they really expected to hold. Probably the brightest spot for Democrats was holding the seat in deep red Montana. Senator Tester narrowly prevailed there, a state that Trump had made a big target. Democrats picked up about half a dozen governorships, but they lost plum contests in the critical states of Florida and Ohio. What this means right now is that the Democrats could launch their own investigations, and that's very important because the president just fired his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, and put in a Mr. Whitaker, who is on record as criticizing the investigation of special counsel Robert Mueller and called for sharply curtailing that investigation. And so we are going to see more clashes, more polarization, more conflict in Washington.
Carlin, your thoughts?
I agree with what Alan has said. I think the power that the Democrats will have in terms of subpoena power, they will start a number of investigations into Trump's personal life, his tax returns, his business dealings, and the way he's conducted himself in his presidency. So you can expect a lot of that going forward.
Well, let's turn to some of the big issues in the campaign, most notably illegal immigration and that caravan heading to the U.S. borders. I want to get your sense of what you made of Donald Trump's press conference on the morning following the midterms.
Yes. Well, the press conference was absolutely bizarre. You know, when he was asked about policy, he had no coherent answers, even on policies that were near and dear to his heart. As was typical, he lashed out and criticized the press, even yelled at and insulted members of the press. He thinks that's a strategy that works for him, and he's not entirely wrong. The standing of the press among the American people has plummeted. Of course, he was completely off base in saying this was a tremendous success for Republicans. When you lose one chamber of Congress, even when you hold on to the other, that's not a big success. Any right-wing initiatives on the part of this administration are going to die in the House. And Trump, regardless of what happens with the Mueller investigation, is going to have to deal with the House investigations.
Yeah, but Carlin, on the border protection issue, though, I mean, it did play well with the conservative base in those Senate races. But did nativism boomerang in the House suburban districts where the majority is determined?
I think the suburban districts where, in fact, the Democrats did very well this time were probably influenced by that issue, but it's quite possible it was just dislike of Donald Trump and broadly across the board. The immigration issue is one of those issues that if the subject is illegal immigration or border security, it tends to benefit the Republicans. If it's immigration more broadly or protecting those dreamers who've come here with their parents, then that benefits the Democrats. And so it was an important issue, I think, in some places, but again, not the biggest issue in the campaign.
We're talking U.S. midterms. My guests are Carolyn Bowman from AEI and Alan Lichtman, author of The Embattled Vote in America. Alan, getting back to some of your points, you know, a few months ago, you know, where we had the Democrats, they were raising money at record levels. We had something like 40 GOP House incumbents. They'd retired, most from congressional districts where the president's approval ratings were low. The Mueller probe, you mentioned, they were handing out indictments of former Trump advisors. Things looked pretty bad for Trump. But all things considered, this isn't such a bad result, though, right?
No, it's not a massive blue wave. You can't call it a wave election when the party holding the White House actually gained seats in the U.S. Senate. That's not what we saw, for example, in the Republican revolutions of 1994 or 1966. But let's not forget, the Democrats were facing a bitingly bad map in the Senate. Mm. They were defending many more seats than the Republicans, and they were defending something like 10 seats in states that Donald Trump had won, including states where he had won by high double digits. And the Democrats did hold on to two deep ruby red states, West Virginia and Montana. But certainly it wasn't a wave, and it wasn't a wave in the gubernatorial elections where Democrats made gains, but not what they expected. And Republicans still hold on to most of the state legislatures in America. And this is very important because in 2020, you're going to have another census and there's going to be another redistricting, and control of state governments is critical for the extent to which one party might gerrymander the districts to favor their own partisans. Another sleeper issue in this election that no one has talked about is the subject of my book, The Embattled Vote in America, and that is voter suppression. You know, those elections in Florida and Georgia, those crucial Senate and gubernatorial elections, were decided by razor-thin margins. And we haven't gotten the word on this, but I have to wonder to what extent voter suppression efforts in those two states, particularly in Georgia, where you had the man running the elections, the Secretary of State, Mr. Kemp, also running for governor. That could be an untold story of this election.
Now, Alan proposes some reforms to get more Americans voting, Carlin. One of them is to abolish the Electoral College. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime, perhaps sometime in the future, but it's very unlikely. I should say I certainly agree with Alan on the importance of those governor's races. They don't get quite as much attention. Our governors are outward-looking. They care deeply about issues involving trade. And going into this election, the Republicans had what we called 27 trifectas, where they controlled both the governor's mansion and both houses of the state legislature. They lost a bunch of those in this election compared to the Democrats, who controlled only 8 of those, and the Democrats have made some gains, and that's just enormously important for redistricting.
Carlin, what lies ahead now? I mean, we've talked about this on this program before. Is the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan, is it now the party of Donald Trump?
The
Republican Party is definitely the party of Donald Trump right now, and they were extraordinarily loyal to him in the voting on Election Day.
Yeah, but Alan, I mean, do you think Ronald Reagan would be aghast at Trump's protectionism and exclusionary nativism?
Absolutely. You know, Ronald Reagan was not a nationalist. He was not a reactionary. You got to understand, Trump is not a conservative. He has shattered some of the most core conservative principles. For example, strict construction of the Constitution and fidelity to the original meaning of its provisions. He's trashed that, saying I could just by executive order alter the Constitution. Conservatives should be aghast at that. Protectionism goes against the grain of traditional conservatism, at least since Ronald Reagan. One of Ronald Reagan's signature transformations was to move the Republican Party away from protectionism and into free trade. And let's not forget, Ronald Reagan did not believe in just drawing walls around the United States. Some important immigration initiatives were achieved under Ronald Reagan. So I think the party of Reagan is dead, the party of Trump is ascendant.
Okay, but Carlin, Republicans have a leader. Do Democrats have any dominant national leaders? I mean, and do they have any clear agenda beyond bagging Trump to take it into the 2020 presidential election?
Well, we have possibly 25 Democrats who want to run for president in 2020. So, I mean, that's an indication that there's no real clear leader of the party. Perhaps it's Joe Biden. It certainly isn't Hillary Clinton, who still is unpopular.
Mind you, you had something like 16 Republican presidential candidates in 2016, right, Carlin?
Exactly. And now we have many more. It's hard to imagine what the Democrats are going to do with the debates and other things going forward.
But this must be a problem for the Democrats, right?
It's a very big problem for the Democrats going forward. It may shake out a little bit more until when we get closer to 2020. But still, that's a lot of candidates.
Mind you, Alan, you'd remember in late 1990, the midterm elections then, no one heard of the draft dodging, marijuana smoking, womanizing governor of a backwater state who knocked off a war hero. Correct.
Correct. Yes, let me speak to this, because I wrote the book, The Keys to the White House, which is the prediction system for presidential elections that's been right since 1984, including Donald Trump in 2016. I want to make two points. One, this election was not good for Republicans going into 2020. One of the keys to the White House is midterm elections, so they lose that key. Another key to the White House is scandal. And with the Democrats likely to, as Colin and I agree, launch all of these investigations, the scandal key is more likely to drop. Let me also say the Democrats have a tremendous ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. They are completely misguided when they think about presidential candidates. They think they should nominate establishment, safe, quote unquote, electable candidates like Walter Mondale in 1984, Mike Dukakis in 1988, Al Gore in 2000, John Kerry in 2004, Hillary Clinton in 2016. What do all of those safe, electable candidates have in common? They all lost.
Colin.
Right. Who's won, as you pointed out, candidates?
Yeah, Alan, do you think that they'll nominate a populist this time, someone far to the left? The party's clearly been pulled to the left over the course of the Obama years.
No question. I just wrote a piece for the Conservative Daily Caller in which I said, not that they have to nominate someone from the left, but they can't go to the tired old establishment, the Joe Bidens, the Elizabeth Warrens, Hillary Clinton. They have to find someone new, someone in the mold of Beto O'Rourke, who almost pulled off the upset of the century
in Texas,
deep red Texas.
Ted Cruz.
And maybe even Beto O'Rourke himself, but someone like that.
Let's get back to the fundamental point here, though, that this is a very divided country. This is all too often said. You've got rising partisan hostility, widening divisions between urban and rural America. Carlin, you've written about this, the record gender gap, the fault line of education. I want to run a quote by you just to close things off. Robert Gates, of course, he was the Secretary of Defense in both the Obama and Bush Jr. administrations. He once said, the greatest national security threat to the US, these are his words, is the 2 square miles that encompasses the Capitol building and the White House. Now, Alan, Gates said this in 2014, well before Trump arrived on the scene. What would he make of Congress now?
Well, I think he wouldn't make much of the Congress, which has really been pretty much ineffective in checking Trump and having really any influence on Trump's reactionary foreign policy, pulling out of the Paris Accords on climate, pulling out of the deal with Iran on nuclear weapons, and now pulling out of what is one of Ronald Reagan's signature accomplishments. People don't realize this. The Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement with the Soviets, now Russia, that keeps these deadly, dangerous missiles from being in place in Europe, where there's about a 5-minute warning if something goes off. That was Ronald Reagan's signature foreign policy accomplishment, and now Donald Trump has repudiated it, and our standing around the world has plummeted. Our soft power is almost gone, and our support for democracy and human rights seems to be non-existent.
Colin?
Well, it would be important to know whether or not the Russians violated the INF Treaty, and that's why we're pulling out. Interestingly, you've seen no public backlash to pulling out of the Iran deal or even the Paris Climate Accords. Those aren't big issues, I think, for Americans in terms of the way they think about their politics. Foreign policy is on the back burner of the stove. It's always there. It's at a steady simmer, but those aren't issues that really have energized the electorate, I don't think, and people aren't paying that much attention.
Well, one thing that will unite all of us here is that these midterms just confirms and extends America's current political divisions. Carlin, Alan, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carlin Bowman from the American Enterprise Institute and Alan Lichtman, author of The Embattled Vote in America, just out from Harvard.